Hey, welcome to episode 7 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is Robbie. I'm your host today, and joining me is Jeff.
Good morning.
JD.
Hello.
And Wayne.
Hello.
Welcome back, Wayne. We're glad
Thank
to have you.
You
here. Hey, so this week is already, I don't know, local news, world news looking. Are you guys watching the Olympics at all?
I catch in a little bit.
I love to watch the Olympics. I love to watch these athletes who are super talented and who have worked so hard, and I think it's exciting to watch.
Well, one shot every 4 years is kind of an amazing thing.
It's all on the line.
And sometimes it's 4 years and a minute and a half, you know?
Right. That's so true. And I looked at the medal count this morning, and the U.S. was like fifth overall. So behind Norway.
Getting smacked by Norway.
It's like all these like winter countries. It's winter like year round. So Norway, Germany, Canada, and Netherlands. There's no way we were going to get above that. Like there's no way. I think some of the best stories. And so we see like Jamaica. You see, had a women's bobsledding team, and then something happened with like their driver, and the driver was like, I'm going home and I'm taking my bobsled with me. And so like they didn't have a, did you see that? They didn't have a bobsled.
No.
Yeah. So they were there ready to compete, didn't have a bobsled because the other lady took it or whatever. And then I think it was Jamaican Red Stripe like tweeted out like, no bobsled, no problem. Contact us. And so the team contacted them and apparently bought them a bobsled so they could compete. I mean, it's just like, you can't even make that stuff up. That is just so good.
That is hilarious. I had not heard that.
Yeah. So, just simple news things. And then, and we are recording this on a Wednesday, and I don't know if you guys saw, I was saddened to hear that Billy Graham passed away.
I just saw that this morning.
Yeah. And so I think venture to say he was one of the most influential pastors of this past century. And even if you weren't directly impacted by him, probably somebody you were discipled by was. I mean, it's pretty faithful to say that. And I think his demeanor, the way he carried himself, the way he presented the gospel, is definitely a testament and an example that we all should follow in that. Whether you agree with everything he said or not, I think there's something a man that can go 99 years scandal-free in an age of scandal. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing. So, but this this week, we're coming off of a lesson JD you taught, and off of Luke 12, where Jesus tells a story. I thought you did a great job because he's in the middle of teaching, mm-hmm. and then this guy interrupts him and says, "Hey, deal with this dispute between my brother." And Jesus isn't in the business of getting involved between siblings. We see like Mary and Martha. He doesn't really get involved in that, you know, and then ends up telling a story about a guy who does really well for himself, stores everything up in his barns, sits back, relaxes, and then that night he dies.
Yeah.
and really takes a lesson from that. And so, I guess, you know, JD, is there anything with your lesson that kind of had to hit the cutting room floor, or maybe you're saying now we could have expanded on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a tough lesson because Jesus did something that was super countercultural in his day, and I think is maybe even more countercultural in ours, because he looks at this guy who exhibits both the habits of a spender and a saver. Right. And in our culture, spending is fun and people like to spend money, and we applaud people spending money and having fun with it. But there's a point at which we can all look at a super spender and be like, wow, dude, you're being an idiot. But nobody looks at a super saver. You know, this guy who's got loads and loads stored up, you know, the American ideal is never having to work again. And he looks at that guy who takes in this gigantic harvest and decides to save every bit of it, give none of it away, store it up, eat it, live and drink and be merry and all that kind of stuff. And he looks at this guy and says, you're a fool. And so we hovered around this idea of limiting both your saving and your spending so that you can have a greater level of impact on the kingdom. And And I just got to be honest, like, this is the kind of lesson that when you teach it, nobody walks up to you afterwards and goes, thank you so much. Like, this is life-changing moment. Like
yeah, brother really needed to hear
yeah,
it.
Like, yeah, exactly, right? Like, yeah. Nobody walks up to you and tells you this is the greatest lesson they've ever heard you teach, right? But I don't know. For me, I think the one thing that we weren't really able to deal with in depth just because of time is how to help people who are dealing with massive debt. Because we just dealt with, like, you know, okay, if you're the average Highland Countyan, this is about how much you're making. And we talked about, okay, ways that they could save and give and be generous and all that kind of stuff within the context of their current income. But we didn't have much time to really deal with how do people climb out of debt? Because it's a big factor in our culture for so many people.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess I'll open it up. Wayne or Jeff, do you have any thoughts if somebody's, you know, because I think I had the same thought, you know, sitting there listening, going, well, man, like if I have to decide between like putting food on the table and paying a bill, like how do you begin to get your head above the water in a time like that?
Well, I think one of the big problems that we see in our culture is consumer debt. It's debt that at the end of which you have nothing to show for, and that's a major problem. And you see this a lot with credit card debt and that kind of thing. I see it a lot in court because sometimes I have to sign off on garnishment paperwork and stuff like that, and people have gotten in over their heads. And then the interest rate kicks in, and now they can't seem to climb out. And I think, you know, I think that's a real problem for many people in our culture. It's not like a car debt where you have a car that you're using, or a mortgage on your home, and at the end of the day, you actually own a home. Most people, when it comes to credit card debt, they can't actually show you what they have that money went for.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there's nothing there.
I ended up paying like $200 for a hamburger.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I put it on a credit card at 30% interest.
Exactly.
10 years to pay it off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
There's that new commercial out where the couple goes out to eat and says, well, this meal costs us, but eventually it's going to cost us, you know, another $300 because we just put it on there. Or this purse or this dress, you know, is eventually going to cost me because we have, in our society, have made it so easy to get things. I mean, and to buy it, to go out and not buy them, but just to like you said, consumer debt, to get it, and without a whole lot of education on what's the implications of what happens 2 years from now or 3 years from now if you don't watch what you're spending.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is to try to take this long view of what I need, and you know, this car versus that car. Right. And really think about some of those things that end up costing extra. And am I doing this? And we can make all sorts of justifications, especially think about a car, right? Like, well, I'm going to have it at the end. I need reliable transportation. I need, you know, but then they, oh gosh, what's the average car payment? It's like $467 or something like that a month. And we end up paying that out. And maybe that's some of our listeners, and you're buried in this car. You know, and I know, like Dave Ramsey says, sometimes his radio show it's sell the car day. Every single day, it's just sell the car, you know, because that's going to solve the problem of where you're in. And so, Jeff, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think one of the things that a lot of people struggle with in our culture is this impetus that you have to have whatever it is, you name it, I've got to have it now. Mm. There is no sense of delaying gratification or saving to buy something so that you can buy it with cash and not end up putting it on a card or having to pay interest. There's no sense of that. It's if I want it now, I should have it now. And that gets so many people in trouble until they can change that mindset from that instant gratification. You're always going to be in trouble. You're always going to be dancing on the edge of debt.
Yeah. And I think if we're going to be honest, that have it now mentality really borders on, and it maybe is greed. this, you know, that, yeah, and greed's a dirty, you know, it's a new four letter word now, because we think of greed, we think Enron scandal and anybody else, any rich type business tycoon. Well, that's greedy. I'm not greedy. I'm just trying to provide for my family. Right. But the reality is I need bigger. I need better. Well, my 40-inch TV, it's not nearly big enough. It's, you know, you realize how many more pixels I could have if I just do this. And we think about that, and to think about greed. I mean, Paul in two different times, Ephesians and Colossians, refers to greed actually as idolatry. Mm-hmm. Which sit and chew on that one for a little bit, because idolatry is putting something ahead of God, and it's that we make an idol of something, that we're actually worshiping something, and so in turn, then we're worshiping a thing, a man-made thing. And then we say, oh, I'm better than those, you know, those pagans in the Bible that I read about, you know, and we've become the same.
Well, I think greed is really kind of just an extension of that quote that you used by Seneca. Because when you think about it, greed is not limited to the wealthy. Greed is as possible and probably as likely, if not more, a problem for the poor as it is for the wealthy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's that Seneca quote of it's not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor is really, it drives right at that mindset. Because I remember hearing Tim Keller give an interesting lesson about greed. Because I listened to some of his podcasts and stuff, and he was talking about greed, and he said it's greed is one of those very sneaky sins, because it's not like you can say. And he gave a really humorous example. He's like take committing adultery. It's not like you just randomly woke up and go, oh, you're not my wife. Like, I mean, you know, when you're committing adultery, you're like, you know, when you lied to that person, you know, when you walked out of Walmart with that thing you didn't pay for. Like those sins are very like in your face. But he said, all of us would go greed. Oh, I know a guy that's really greedy, you know, and we never turn that inward. And I think, Robbie, you make a great point that if we're looking at stuff as the next best thing, you know, if I look at my life and if I just had this, I would be okay. If I just had this amount of money, I would be okay. If I was just at this level of income, I would be okay. If I had these benefits, I would be okay. Those statements in and of themselves in our brain indicate a temptation to greed. Now, whether you give in to them or not is not the issue, or I guess it is the issue, but what I'm saying is having those thoughts may not be in and of itself, you know, manifesting as greed in your life, but it is a temptation to greed, you know, to think in that way that, man, if I could just live like that person,
my life would be better.
My life would be better.
Or whatever, yeah. Make this amount of money.
You are already heading down the road of greed, and it's scary how easy it becomes.
Well, and I think the problem too with that is because so many of us live beyond our means, that when we end up getting a raise or getting a new job, making more money, we've already overextended ourselves anyways, mm-hmm. and so now our credit card companies and bankers, whatever, they're going to look at, oh, you make this much more. Okay, I'll actually extend you more. So we actually are continually playing catch up rather than just learning to be content and where we are.
And the best case scenario for a lot of people is they get a raise and they go, oh, it's like they break through the surface, like, oh, I can barely breathe again, right? Like, I'm barely head above water now. Like, and it's, For so many of us in our culture, it's like we have got to get to a place where we do not need the next raise. We do not need the next bonus. We do not need some giant windfall to happen in our lives to be organizing ourselves in such a way that we can continue to survive and fulfill the call of the gospel. I mean, it should not be either or if you're a Christian, to, you know, fulfill the call of the gospel to be a generous person and to take care of the things that you absolutely have to take care of. And shy of, and this is one of the things I didn't say in the lesson, but if you have to make a choice, make the choice of fulfilling the gospel and walking that out in your life and being a generous person and walk back what you need. Because there's always a way that you can live on less.
And I guess unpack that statement. And when we say we're fulfilling the gospel in the way we're living generously, what does that mean?
I mean, to me, it's that ability and willingness to say with our finances, God, I don't have to have that house. I could live in this house. I don't have to have that car. I could drive this car. I could have, I don't have to have, you know, this bank account. I can live with this bank account. And the difference gets made up in how I bless the church family that I'm a part of, the poor person down the street, the neighbor who's in need right now. I mean, taking those resources and being willing and able and open to make a difference in the lives of other people with them. I think that in Jesus' name,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like that's the key right
in
there.
In taking the message of God to people through the things that we have and are able to use.
It's not just the monetary side of it, because Jeff, you threw out a statistic a couple weeks ago about divorce and the percent of those divorced that money was an issue. It's the stress that's involved with your lifestyle when you overspend. You can't be that generous person that God created you to be, so you've put yourself, like you said, in that rut. I had a friend told me one time that her husband's overtime is going to get cut back, and says we can't make it on just regular hours. We have to have the overtime to survive. I'm thinking that's a sad place to be in when you have to work 50, 60 hours just to pay the basics, to pay the bills. So, I mean, that's the society that we were living in, and it'll tell you, those people who are generous are happier. You know, we teach that in the class series. I just taught it Sunday, you know. Generous givers, people who are outward focused, are happier. You have better health. You have all those things because you're relieving all that stress and things in your life, which is, to me, a great thing, a great place to be in. But society doesn't paint that picture for you. It's like you said, they paint the picture. You got to have it, and you've, Jeff, you said it, that instant, we live in an instant gratification society. We got to have it now, and we're going to make it easy for you to get it.
Yeah, and I don't want any of our listeners to think that somehow, like, we're like sitting in an ivory tower and haven't made bad decisions before. I know. Absolutely. I know I have debt still, and my wife and I are making plans and strides as we pay that off, you know, and I think that's what it is. It's a plan over time. Do we always do it perfectly? No.
Yeah.
Right. And there's sometimes that we are overextended because we made a stupid decision and we were, you know, driving with the kids. We got caught up in traffic. The kids are now screaming. We need to go through, you know, line of McDonald's. Our budget was zeroed out, right? Every money, every dime going someplace. And we stop and decide to go to McDonald's. And guess what? $15 messed up the entire budget for the month. You know, it happens. And so, you know, I don't want anybody feeling like, oh, they're just, you know, harping on me. I guess the point I would make is that if Jesus, what Jesus said was true, and I'm going to say it is that, you know, I can't serve both God and money. Well, we say, well, I need money. Okay. Well, that's an attitude about that money.
Yeah.
Is that we tend to love money and then use people. And the reality is just be the other way around, that we love people and we use money to love them. And so that takes a different perspective, and it also takes time. And so I would say that if you're sitting and listening to this and you are in debt right now and stressed out, and this conversation, you've thought about turning it off about 100 times already, let us just encourage you that we are here to help. And there are services that Good News Gathering provides that wants to help you get out of that. And you just need to call the office or email us, and we will get you in the right direction with the right people to help you out of that. Because we don't want you to be crippled. Because I think, JD, you're kind of bottom line. You said, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're limited saving and spending makes unlimited impact possible.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really good to think about, that we have to decide, what do I want my impact to be? And you may not be ready to go in a year. Right. But maybe you're thinking, okay, in 15 years, I can have this paid off. Maybe it's so insurmountable, and that we hope it doesn't take that long. Right. But this isn't a guilt trip. This is, we want you to be free.
Yeah. You know, to me, the thing, there's lots of people out there that provide good advice. I mean, you might be a Dave Ramsey person or, you know, some of those financial consultant folks. They have a lot to say. And my wife and I have benefited greatly from some of Dave Ramsey's principles and stuff like that. We ran a simulcast here last fall with him. Because we just want people to understand that it is possible to live a gospel-centered, you know, Jesus-centered life with your finances and still enjoy life. I mean, it's not impossible to do the right thing with your finances, be generous, be giving, be able to respond when there's people in front of you in need, and yet still do things that, I mean, have a, you know, a decent house, drive a decent car, you know, go on a fun vacation with your family every now and again. I'm not arguing that those are bad things. In fact, those are very good and life-giving things. The challenge is when those become the thing, right? It's when we don't discipline ourselves to stay focused on ensuring that we are generous. And that we have the capacity to be generous, that it's in those situations that we really struggle.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
I think that one of the things that we have to get, where one place we have to get is we have to get to the place where we can say there is a limit that's wise. When my wife and I bought our house, we went to our banker and said, okay, you know where we are financially. What do you recommend in terms of a price range for a house? And obviously at that time I was in full-time law practice, and your income fluctuates year to year. You don't know. It just depends on your caseload and who walks in the door. And he said, well, at what I'm seeing, here's where you need to limit yourself. And so as we went out and we looked at homes, we saw some homes that we really liked, and the answer had to be no, because it's going to pressure us, and we're going to live with that pressure for the next however many years we put a mortgage on this. And so we went at it from that aspect. Here's our range, and we will find something in that range that we like and that we're happy with. And away we go. But we're not going to go beyond that, because all we're asking for is trouble. And I think you have to get to that point where limiting is wise and you see it that way. Otherwise, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, I mean, and really some of that, speaking of housing, is kind of how 2008, the market kind of tanked.
Yeah.
Because of that. That you had people getting housing loans they should have never been approved for because of previous paying out, because of their income, all of that. But we were told, you know, oh, I can have this house. And it's just really unfortunate because there's so many different factors playing into that.
And you know, when we bought our house, it was pre-2008. So we could have gotten a loan for a whole lot more than we did. But the banker was a friend, and he's like, don't do that. Yeah. And it was wise advice.
We need good people in our lives to slow us down. And that's and this is where it's wise to have counsel around us in times when we don't need something, because we will be more likely to listen to them when we don't want to listen, right? There's no point in having counsel if I'm not going to take it.
Well, and there's an element of financial transparency that – in our culture is really uncomfortable for people. For people to talk money in America, I was just reading if you were here on Sunday, at the bottom of the outline, I referenced a book Dad and I read as we were preparing for this set of lessons. And in the book, they call it the American money taboo, right? Where in America, we will talk about anything but about our financial situation, and we don't share our financial situation with anybody. And, you know, and they talked about how in American Christian churches, you have discipleship groups, right? You have small groups that are around everything, you know, marriages, how to raise better children, like how to serve. And there's so few places where people actually get transparent about what they're doing with their money. And you run a group like that and the numbers are small. We have done the financial freedom class here for a number of years. There is rarely more than two or three couples going through it because for some reason in our culture, it is incredibly intimidating to be honest about what you're doing with your money. And it's something that we've got in the church. I really think we've got to break that stigma. Because we've, like you said earlier, we've all made money mistakes. You know, we have. Like for me, when I first bought my house, you know, my problem wasn't, to me, my looking back, it wasn't that I made a bunch of dumb purchases. It was just that I wasn't really making headway on my mortgage. I wasn't being effective in paring that thing down sooner. I was paying a little bit more than the minimum, but not much more. And, you know, thank God I got married to a woman who's pretty smart financially, and all of a sudden we're paying double and triple the mortgage payment because we've got, you know, joint incomes now. And you can really roll that off and save yourself tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars over the life of a mortgage. And yet we don't think about this stuff. So I've made money mistakes in the similar ways. And so it's one of those deals where, you know, it's so easy to do that. And until you open up what you're doing with somebody else that you trust and that's going to care about you and that isn't in it to just like, oh my gosh, you're being an idiot, like, but really is coming alongside to help you, you're going to have a hard time actually making wise decisions because you're making them in the dark. Like, talk to somebody, figure out somebody that you can engage with from a Christian perspective who's going to want to help you get to a place where you can not only be generous, but you can take care of savings and you can take care of your family, and do so in reasonable ways, and share it with them so that they can see where the faults are, they can see where the issues are, they can see where you're doing well, and they can encourage you. And your life will be better if you're a little more transparent with those kind of issues. I believe that with all my heart.
And that goes back. I taught, when I first started teaching high school mathematics, the first few years I taught, I was able to teach a consumer's mathematics class, which I think of all the algebras and trigs and stuff I taught was probably the best class I ever taught, because students were coming into my class. They had no idea about interest, insurance, those kind of things. I'd have bankers come in and they would have to do a loan. I'd say, okay, pick your house out. And they go through the papers, find a house, and okay, here's the interest rate right now. And I'd say, okay, here it is, $350,000. Well, that's not bad. I said, no, that is your interest payment over the period of a 20 or 30 year loan. And they would just be absolutely floored, like, what? That's what you're paying back to borrow this money.
Yeah, they weren't doing it out of the goodness of their heart.
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And so I think it goes back to culture. A lot of people, you know, all of a sudden in education, we thought that's not a really good class to teach, so everybody has to take the algebra and the trig and go that route. I'm thinking, this is the one thing every American needs. How to balance a checkbook, how to budget. And Janice and I are even thinking about taking the Freed Up Financial class because, you know, we're both retired now. I'm still working part-time to supplement the income, but, you know, with health insurance going up every year, you know, and us, I'm thinking, you know, we're at that point, and you said, Robbie, you know, we're not here sitting in on a throne that we have. We have made mistakes. I've made several. And so we're thinking maybe we need to look at this, and maybe it's time to sit down and make a budget, and maybe I don't need 250 cable channels because it just went up another $20 last month. I'm ready to throw the receiver out the back door. If it wasn't for two grandkids coming through the house 5 days a week, it probably would have been gone. But they need a little Disney Channel, a little Mickey Mouse right now. Makes Janice's day go by a little better. So,
you think about the ministry center that we built, and we incurred a substantial debt on this thing. And the leadership team sat down and figured out we're gonna do the very best we can to pay this debt off in 10 years flat. And what we ended up figuring out is if we can do that, and if we stay within the plan that we've developed, we will save somewhere in the neighborhood of $289,000 in interest. That's massive. I mean, you think about
new addition.
Well, it's not just our new addition. Think what we could do in our community.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Helping people or in Haiti. I mean, $289,000 in Haiti. What could we build down there? I mean, the opportunities are endless. Yeah, just about.
All right. What's the worst financial mistake or purchase you've ever made?
I'll go ahead and go because I asked. I'll have to go on record here because I asked Robbie, say, what's the question you're going to throw at me? So I actually called Janice and got her advice to make sure.
He had to call his wife to ask. If you don't know what the worst thing you've ever done with money is, always ask your wife.
So, and she just right away, which I agreed with her, but I grew up on Rocky Fork Lake and I love the boat and I love the ski. So, you know, when I first started teaching, I got that first paycheck. I'm thinking, holy cow, I'm the richest guy in the world, you know? I am a rich guy, you know? I'm getting paid, you know, finally. And so the first thing I did, you know, I bought a boat and didn't ask Janice, didn't sit down as a couple that, you know.
It's always a good way to make decisions.
Yeah. And so after I buy the boat and start doing things, I find out she hates the water. She doesn't like boating. The boys didn't like boating. So I had a boat that sat, you know, on dry land for about 3 years.
It's like the saddest story. Just you sitting in a boat on dry land wearing a life jacket.
I would just go out. You know, my life jacket was fine. I just sat there and maybe it'd rain. I'd feel like I was in the water, you know. So I had a couple friends I'd pay once in a while to go with me, you know, that kind of thing. So, hey, I'll pay for everything if you'll just ride around the lake with me once or twice. So, but yeah, that was probably the worst decision I ever made. So the boat ended up getting sold. So after a couple, 3 years of, if it didn't have a whole lot of hours on it. So it was a good thing.
Easy resale.
Wow. So the one that's coming to mind for me is I was back in college and I made money, you know, in college a little bit, mostly during the summers working and stuff like that, because playing football in college, I didn't have much chance to work on campus. So I made most of my money in the summers between. And I remember, you know, I went to a sporting goods store and I loved to ski. And I had grown out of all my old ski equipment. And there was a place that was having them on sale. And I kind of made an impulse purchase and it was just one of those where the money was gone and it was out the door and it ended up not being as good equipment as I thought it was going to be. And I went out on it and it actually hurt me. And it wasn't fitted quite right. And it caused me a lot of trouble with my shins for a minute. The boots were a bad fit for me and I ended up having to spend more money, going back and getting better boots. And I ended up just having to give them away cause they just didn't fit. I had to go kind of double because I like to ski. And so it's something I do. So I ended up having to go buy better stuff and spend money again and make sure that things were fitted right. It was just, you know, impulse purchases of that nature are stupid, and ski equipment is somewhat expensive anyway. So I remember that was a pretty bad purchase. It hurt my wallet and it hurt me.
Yeah.
So it was kind of that was a dumb one.
I'm really struggling with this whole taboo, you know, the transparency taboo about money, but. But mine involves ski equipment too, because I love to ski, and it's been over 10 years now, and we were going to Vermont, I think it was, to ski, and I went out and dropped a ton of money on brand new boots and skis, and Cheryl broke her leg on that trip, and we have not been skiing since. And so I dropped all this money on a pair of skis and boots that are super nice. And I've used them 5 days, maybe 7 days total.
So you still have them?
I still have them. And they sit in the closet and collect dust.
I did buy a pair of ski boots one time, but I don't regret that decision at all.
Yeah.
So I had so much fun on the mountain on those things. I did, however, I'm almost embarrassed to admit this. I bought a car sight unseen on eBay one time from a dealer out of Florida. It was legit. And I had a nice car for a while, but I look back and I'm like, that was dumb. Like, I can't believe I did that. Like, so, because there wasn't cars locally, apparently. I had to go through Florida to get a car. I don't know why I did that looking back. But, yeah.
See, in kind of looking back on this stuff and reflecting on my own lesson this week and trying to allow the message that, you know, that I taught to, you know, change me. The thing that I've been kind of coming back to over the course of the days has been there's a balance that you mentally have to achieve because there is a fact that you've got to spend some money and especially as you start to raise a family, which I'm in that phase right now. I believe that God wants us to be generous with our family. I believe God wants me to be generous with my wife. I believe God wants me to be generous with my kids. I believe God wants me to be generous with the people that I care about. And so, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a reasonable family vacation. I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, taking my wife out on a date, you know, a couple of times a month to make sure that our marriage stays strong in the midst of raising kids and all that kind of stuff. So at the same time, you've got to balance that with how on earth am I structuring my financial situation and my life and everything that I've got going on in such a way that I am making the biggest possible impact for the kingdom of God. Like, whether it's limiting myself a little bit in the what I spend, or it's, you know, like I said on Sunday, putting that tithe right up front and making the choice to be generous at the front of the month and then having to deal with it every month, whatever it looks like for you, make a decision to live within a balance. And focus yourself on allowing yourself to have that balanced approach to life where you're staying focused on the gospel, you're allowing yourself to enjoy life and do the things that you need to do. If you have made bad decisions and you have got a pretty difficult financial situation, or maybe it's not bad decisions, maybe bad things have happened to you. You've lost a job, a plant shut down, an employer fired you, you lost both cars in a week. You know, stuff happens sometimes. Find a way to live on less until you can do more. I mean, it just find the way. There is always a cut you can make, even if it means selling the house and moving into an apartment. Nobody wants to do that, but if it means that, so that you can continue to live out, you know, taking care of your family and, you know, living out the call of the gospel to be generous, then do what you got to do. But live in that and allow yourself to make decisions from that perspective.
And maybe I'm just stating the obvious here for a room full of pastors, but man, pray. Mm-hmm. You serve a God who paves his streets and our best stuff, gold, right? And man, just pray about it. Come to Jesus, admit the wrongs, admit we need help, and just submit to what he'd have for you in that, and then filter everything through this of, do I really need this? And how could Jesus better use this? We have to come back to that. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's kind of land the plane on this and let's just go around the room of what's the best financial decision you think you've made, maybe as a family, as a couple, as a man, what's the best thing you've done to decide to do?
Well, I think with Janice and I is, you know, me not being raised in church, and when I come to faith and start attending this, when I start to understand the tithing. And when we come to the decision early in our marriage to, even though money was tight, you know, young couple, kids, all that stuff, was to say, this is what God expects of us. So we made that decision earlier in our marriage to tithe. And I think that was the best decision we ever made, because it goes back to what JD talked about this week, being able to be generous with people, being able to help give. Now we can help support some kids in Haiti, you know, that kind of thing, knowing that that is going to bring greater joy to us, knowing that there's kids in Haiti that are getting an education, that are getting fed, versus me having 50 more channels on my cable or whatever it may be. That's the best decision I think we ever made financially.
I think one of the best decisions Cheryl and I ever made was that we don't have to own a brand new car. We buy used, and we typically try to save our money so that we don't even have a car payment. I told my wife after I don't know, I can't remember how many years ago, I will never have a car payment again. I just won't do it. And so we buy good cars, but used, and things we can afford.
I think for my wife and I, a few years back, we've never been people to use credit cards. We kind of jumped onto the Dave Ramsey deal a number of years ago, and he's like super anti-credit card. And so we have never really done that. But for us, probably the most helpful thing that in going through, you know, some of that material was the debt snowball. Because at the time we had some school loans hanging out there. And we decided that we were going to do that. And the debt snowball is really pretty simple idea. It's you take your smallest debt and you as quickly and as aggressively as possible pay that off. And then all the money that you were spending paying that off, you now apply to your next smallest payment. And then you pay that off as aggressively as you can. And then what Dave Ramsey says is the more you see success and the more you see those debts go by the wayside, the more it's like a snowball rolling downhill, it gathers more speed. And so we did that with all of our school debt, and we're able to pay that off in a matter of months. You know, we thought it was going to take us more than a year to get it done, and we ended up paying it off. And then we applied all of that to our mortgage. And I think we started that and it was either 2014 or 2015. I'm struggling to remember, because we were in Haiti in January when we started, when we talked about it, we said, this is what we're going to do. And then we just paid our house off in at the end of 2017. So I mean, it was either 3 or 4 years time, we paid off all of our school loan and our mortgage just by following that principle. And so for us, it's a complete feeling of freedom right now, for us, because of those decisions.
Yeah, and I think probably for me and my wife, it's just as simple as having $1,000 in savings.
Yeah.
And because if you're trying to dig yourself out of debt, if you don't have some sort of emergency fund, something will happen. Mm-hmm. Tires will blow, kids will get sick, something will happen. And so we have that, and then we forget we have it. It's not to go out to eat on and do that. So that's kind of that first, actually, Dave Ramsey step of $1,000 in the bank. And so now the roof leaks. I don't have a leaky roof and a money problem. I just have a roof problem, you know. So that's it. So, well, hey, we are so grateful that you have tuned in and gone with us on this journey. We'd love to hear feedback from you. So if you have questions, anything we can answer, we'd love to do that. You can email us at info@goodnewsgathering.org, or if you're here on a Sunday morning, you can write it in the comments on a communication card. And if you're not aware, you can hit subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using, and all these podcasts will drop right into your phone or whatever it is you're using every week automatically, so you don't even have to think about it. They're just right there. And so hopefully this has been helpful for you so that you can go deeper in your faith and in this walk. And so we will see you next week.
Have a good day, guys.
Take care.
Thank you all.